the left corner to Aguilar. Aguilar the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilar. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, let's get things going. We are underway on this Thursday, November 28th. Flames Talk is underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Pat Steinberg, and this hour of Flames Talk is coming at you from Adrenaline Source for Sports at Northland Village. We're here at 5235 ahead of their Black Friday sale, which is coming up tomorrow if you're listening live. Black Friday at Adrenaline Source for Sports, both locations, is always legendary. Because the Flames play early on Friday, and we don't have a regular Flames Talk, we are doing the Eric Francis Hour one day early. It's time for a Thursday edition of the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has a $312 million positive economic impact in Alberta annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly. And now from Columbus, Ohio, we say hello to Eric Francis from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca on this Thursday. Mr. Francis, how are you? What's going on?
I'm good, my man. I have to tell you, for all its warts and issues in America politically and otherwise, they do Thanksgiving right. It is always a treat to be in the States for Thanksgiving. I have fond memories as a kid of being down here. Like, it officially kicks off the holidays. Everybody takes the whole four-day weekend off. I was in Detroit this morning. They had like 30,000 people at their parade. Then the Lions game. Now I'm in Columbus, and I haven't seen a soul since because everybody's in their homes having Thanksgiving. It just means so much more to Americans than we do in Canada for whatever reason. And it really makes my heart swell. Like, it's a really cool place to be. If you've never experienced a Thanksgiving in the States, do yourself a favor and do that one day, because it's pretty cool.
I never have. I've been there for the 4th of July, which is, again,
that's a big one.
it's a pretty, like, again, and Canada Day is huge, and we have parties and fireworks, and yet they do things with a, certain, there's a certain pomp and circumstance and extravagance with the way they do things down there. Hey, and the 4th of July is just on a complete different level when they celebrate their country compared to Canada Day here. And that's not even a bad thing. I'm not suggesting it's good or bad.
No.
It's just, it's very clearly different in terms of how the two countries, and lots of, I don't know if anybody quite does things the way Americans do, you know?
No, they like to pound the old chest and be proud, and that's okay. Like, it's they just go big with it. Like, here in Ohio, on Saturdays, the Ohio State-Michigan game, like, everybody around here is just buzzing for that, I guess. And, you know, I remember last year at this time, we were fortunate enough to be in Dallas. And while the players were over at Blake Coleman's in-laws' house, their big spread over there, Ryan Leslie and I and Lanny McDonald, a whole bunch of other people went down to the Cowboys game and watch Dolly Parton do the halftime show. Like, when we talk about doing it big in America, that says it all, especially in Texas, right?
Okay, you're in Columbus right now. Friday at 1 o'clock is the Flames and Blue Jackets as Calgary plays the third of this four-game road trip, looking for their first win on this trip after a 2-1 overtime loss Wednesday in Detroit, which we can get into as we move forward here on the Eric Francis Hour. Francis and Steinberg along with you this hour on Flames Talk, but you just got back to your hotel from Nationwide Arena, and you were down there, home of the Blue Jackets, and been a pretty heavy and emotional afternoon, hey?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. Just had a lengthy chat with Sean Monahan in his locker room, and, you know, I think it's pretty, I put a photo on Twitter there that his stall is right next to Johnny's stall. He asked for that. Johnny's stall is still intact, and on game days they hang the jersey and everything. And his dry stall behind the scenes outside of the dressing room is still intact with all his clothes and all sorts of other stuff. And it's, you know, Sean Monahan tries to pay tribute to Johnny with every interview he does. He wants to stand in front of Johnny's stall just kind of as a powerful reminder and tribute to his good buddy. And you know, outside of the Gaudreau family, I think most people realize that the relationship that he had with Gaudreau was so tight, so deep that, you know, they knew, I think everybody knew that when news broke of Johnny's passing, probably no one outside of the family was going to take it harder than Sean Monahan. I mean, he signed in Columbus just to play with Johnny.
Yep.
And, you know, he bought a house two doors over from Meredith and Johnny, and they wanted to raise their kids together. And, you know, before we even started talking, he pulled out his phone like a proud papa, and he showed me a photo of his little son, Leo, who turned 6 months yesterday. And there's a photo of him in a playpen with Johnny Gaudreau's little Johnny, and they're just hanging out together, just kind of the way Johnny and Monty used to for basically 12 years. And it's just, it's heartbreaking, but also very touching the way that, you know, he's going to raise his kids with Johnny's kids and create this beautiful life for them. And it's what they dreamt of doing together. Unfortunately, it's just him by himself. So, you know, the tales that he spun today, there were some funny ones. And my column's up right now on it. There, you know, you might want to have a tissue ready because it's pretty powerful stuff. This isn't hockey stuff. This is real life stuff. And I give him so much credit for standing in there, answering all the questions, and talking about it without breaking down. Like I said to my editor afterwards, I don't think I've ever finished an interview and had the impulse to give a man a hug. But that's how I felt because of what he's endured over the last handful of months. It's just pretty powerful stuff. I don't know if you've read the piece or not, but I don't know what kind of sticks out with you, but there's some beautiful stories in there that he told.
Well, the article is available right now at sportsnet.ca as the Flames get set to take on the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I mean, honestly, the thing that sticks out to me more than anything else, it's early on in the column, it's just the whole idea that the first person on that August evening when the news was starting to trickle out and everybody had a pretty good idea that this was real and this was actually happening, the guy that I thought of first, Pat, like the first guy outside, as you mentioned, of the Gaudreau family and thinking about what they were going through on that weekend, was Sean. And the first time that it really felt like a kick in the gut was when somebody, I don't know if it was that night or the next day once the news was official, but the next day when I don't even know who it was, but somebody on Twitter posted that iconic video of Sean waiting in the tunnel after the Flames won game 7 against Detroit. That was the first time that it really hit home. And anytime I think about Sean playing with the Blue Jackets, you get a little teary-eyed, Francis, because that was these two guys, we knew how tight they were, and in this city in Calgary, those two guys meant so much to a new beginning for the organization and a new direction for the organization. So when you hear Sean talking about their two kids growing up together, or him saying that he's never going to get over it, and I don't know how you ever do, but you know, just reading things like that, it's the whole sentimental side. It gets you real quickly, and I'm surprised that you didn't need a hug, and I don't even say that as a joke. I'm surprised that you didn't need one right after that, because you know, that was, those two guys have a real special connect. Remember when Sean came back for the first time in Montreal and how teary-eyed he got up on stage when talking about what Calgary meant to him? And then you factor that in with now he's lost another guy who had such a huge connection with Calgary in Johnny Gaudreau. Like that's pretty powerful stuff, man.
He said that I asked him if he still has breakdowns, and he said every day, to be honest. He said like so many different things can set it off. He said when he's driving to the rink, it's all he ever thinks about is Johnny. Because when he drove to the rink so many times, either for practice or games, whether he was a Flame or he was a Hab or wherever he was playing in Winnipeg, you know, that's when he would often call Johnny or text him or get a photo or a FaceTime call from Johnny. The guys are inseparable. And I thought it was so great. He just said, like, we're just two donkeys. And that's a term that Johnny used so much that the players here in Columbus decided to honor Johnny Gaudreau with their player of the game donkey hat after every game. It's named after Johnny. It was something they wanted to do to recognize him. And, you know, there's a mural of him on the front of the Nationwide Arena. I posted a photo of that today. Obviously, the banner's up there from opening night. But he told a great story, Sean did. And at times like this, you know, you got to tell the funny stories sometimes, right? It cuts through it all, and you got to laugh sometimes. And he said that he was playing in Montreal, and he was hurt. And Johnny went over to his house and had the pregame meal at Monahan's house, even though he was playing against his team that night. Then had his pregame nap at Monahan's house. And then Monahan drove him to the game together in Montreal, even though he's with the other team. And that's how close these guys were. And, you know, another funny story told that I just loved was, you think about it, right? He signed on July 1st. This is the guy who's gone through hell physically with all his ailments and was unceremoniously, you know, traded out of Calgary. Just a crappy ending for a guy who had such a good career in Calgary. And he said he signed this summer. He's finally feeling healthy. He's got, you know, 5 years, $27.5 million. He buys a house, two down from Johnny. Like, this is perfect. They were so excited about seeing what they could do together, if they could resurrect that old magic. And then 2 months later, you know, Johnny passes away. And it's just an awful story, of course. But he just said that during the 2 months where they were so excited, he said there was one day Johnny FaceTimed him and he was working out in a gym. And he goes, like, that never happens. Johnny was never a gym rat, but he was so excited about what the possibilities were this year that he went and hit the gym and shocked even Sean Monahan by showing him riding a bike or something like that. So, you know, those are those stories he clings to. And I'm glad you brought up that hug, because he said, like, that hug is, he'll never forget that. And he said, I remember just hugging him and saying, you know what? Like, it wasn't about the goal. It was about his excitement and their friendship. He said, you watch how much he loved to play the game. And I remember, Monahan said, I remember thinking, he gets to play some more. We get to play another round. I'm injured, but he gets to play and I get to watch him. How much of a treat is that? So that hug is iconic in Calgary. And what a wonderful memory of the two that we have whenever we see the video of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that come to mind when, whether you're reading the story, which is up at sportsnet.ca on this Thursday, or even talking with you right now, because, you know, I wonder, it was only a few months later, it was only a couple of months later that Johnny decided to sign in Columbus and Sean got traded to Montreal, and I wonder if at that time, like, I wonder if Sean was like, hey, that's, you know, that's it. And I got my time to play with Johnny, but now it's time to go our separate ways. Like, and then to see that Sean was able to, you know, and the Johnny stuff aside, the fact that Sean Monahan has been able to get his career back, not just on track that he's playing, but, you know, Francis, he's playing some damn good hockey. He had a career resurgence last year in Montreal, and then got traded to Winnipeg, where he was very good. He gets a multi-year deal in free agency, which I don't think anybody thought was going to happen again when he got traded out of Calgary. He's been successful with the Blue Jackets. Like, that in and of itself is this great feel-good story. And then the whole idea that he was going to play with Johnny again, and Flames fans were so excited to see. You're like, okay, Columbus. And there is still kind of the bad blood with the way Johnny left Calgary, but then to see Sean go sign there, I think every Flames fan was like, okay, I think some of the stuff had passed with Johnny. It had been a few years, and now you get to see Monahan and Gaudreau play together again, and we all really kind of came to the realization that Johnny signed in Columbus for family, and family only in a lot of ways, or at least family is the number one priority, and then there's kind of a family member who gets to go play with them, and then you think about, as is very, very palpable in the column, then you think about the fact that they never got to realize kind of version 2.0 of Sean and Johnny. It's still pretty tough to wrap your head around.
You know, talking to guys like Coleman and Rasmus Anderson, and by the way, Rasmus is over at Johnny's house right now with Meredith and the kids, and she's got her family here in Columbus, and Erica Branson's over there, and they're just having a, you can imagine, just be a real emotional, great day to see each other and spend Thanksgiving together. And it's nice that they've maintained that. You know, Anderson is one of Johnny's closest friends. So, you know, I said on the broadcast the other night, Rasmus, on the inside of his left skate, he has the name Gaudreau stitched in there, just as a little bit of a tiny tribute to Johnny. And, you know, this was an emotional visit for him. So I'll be interested to talk to him about how that's gone. Tomorrow we'll probably get him. But, you know, forget they're almost two separate issues, but they're all tied together in one big, you know, horrific run for the guy with the injuries. And you know, a lot of people had written him off, especially in Calgary. Obviously, Brad Treliving did. They gave away a first-round draft pick. It's a masterclass in asset management, what Montreal did with Sean Monahan.
Oh, my
Monahan,
gosh, is it ever.
Right? They got a first-round pick to take him off the Flames' hands, is the way they kind of looked at it. And then they helped him get back to health again and then swapped him out for another first-round draft pick. And that's going to be something that Flames fans will be talking about this summer. We don't have to get into that right now. But the point is, the combination of the injuries and how hard that was in his life, well, those setbacks now feel like, you know, paltry problems in life when you're dealing with the tragedy that he's, you know, been dealing with the last handful of months. So put them all together. And as Blake Coleman said, look, it's easy in life to root for good people, and Monty's good people. And I don't think, I always say that in today's world, like, fans can see what guys are really like. Like, you and I covered guys 15, 20 years ago, and without social media and maybe without as many cameras and different ways to see video, you know, some jerks over the years could get by and people could be fooled into thinking they're a good guy,
right,
or vice versa. But I think in today's world, you see these guys and you're like, yeah, that looks like a good dude. And I think Monahan comes across in every possible way as a good dude. He's not fooling anybody with that. It's genuine. It's real. And you and I, anyone who ever covered him or even kind of watched him afar, has to be thrilled at how things have started this year hockey-wise for him, right? Despite all this tragedy, he's managed to, you know, and like Coleman said, you know, sometimes it might feel, he probably feels like Johnny's along for the ride with him. And I know Monahan said that he definitely feels that way. And the way he pointed at the sky, at the banner after he scored that goal on opening night, boy, that's powerful stuff. That's real life stuff. And I'm so happy it's happening for him. That was the overwhelming sentiment I just wanted to share with him today is, man, I'm just so happy that, you know, you've had a good start to the season and I hope you're doing all right. And he says he is.
Well, and you know, what I think is also kind of important to point out when talking about all this and kind of plays into exactly what you just said about how good a dude Sean is, always was, as a member of the Flames and obviously continues to be. But the Blue Jackets have done all of their memorial stuff. Like, we're almost into December now, and we're into the second quarter of the season. Like, the Blue Jackets are in their season. They've done their memorial stuff. They've done their tributes. They've done, you know, all the really emotional stuff. And yet, here Sean is talking to you at length about it. And, you know, the Blue Jackets are here on December 3rd in Calgary. So that's next week. And so it's kind of like they're reliving it in a lot of ways, reliving what they did in the preseason, reliving what they did at the beginning of the regular season. And now they're playing Calgary for the first time, the only other team Johnny played for. So, you know, they're going through this in a lot of ways. And Sean's going through this in a lot of ways for a second time, which can't be easy either.
No. And like I do, I think to your point, like there's nothing planned for tomorrow in terms of tributes or memorials or anything like that. Like you said, Columbus has done a great job, and they're kind of past that point in the mourning period. This is just kind of a big story for Flames fans to see Monahan again, to visit the city where Johnny last played. You know, the real emotion, I think, is going to come out Tuesday in Calgary. There's no question about that, and I'm sure we'll talk about my exchange with Jane Gaudreau a little bit here. But, you know, I'm not really sure, and neither were any of the players when I talked to them about this game coming up on Friday, what to expect. You know, it'll be the first time for the Flames players to look up and see the banner You know, the mural, there's a mural on the front with Johnny on it. Like they're not hiding Johnny Gaudreau. They didn't take him out of any photos.
Yep.
Dean Evison and I had a really good chat about, you know, we want to make sure people know about Johnny Gaudreau. We're not trying to just move on and pretend it didn't happen, or that, you know, we don't want to be scared by the sadness. Like, let's face this head on. So, you know, the Flames players will see that though firsthand. And, you know, I'm sure it'll be an emotional night. I know Raz certainly felt like looking up at the banner that he felt that was going to be a pretty powerful moment for him when he first sees it tomorrow.
The and that is the that is kind of maybe the next place we'll go, because I know you chatted with Jane, and December 3rd is Tuesday. It's actually kind of it's very strange how the schedule ends up working. I mean, obviously the schedule was already preordained before what happened, but the fact the Flames play the Blue Jackets twice in the span of three games, they play them on Friday, then they go into Pittsburgh, then they again host them on Tuesday. So it's two times in three games the Flames will play the Columbus Blue Jackets. But that Tuesday night game, December 3rd, with as you pointed out and as you revealed, the Gaudreau family is going to make their way to Calgary. We don't know what the details are going to be in terms of what Tuesday night looks like at the Scotiabank Saddledome, but for Flames fans, that's going to be even more emotional, and for because there is going to be pregame festivities, and there festivities is the wrong word. There is going to be pregame ceremonies. There are going to be pregame, you know, tributes, so on and so forth. And so that's when the emotion is going to hit doubly, I think, for a lot of people.
I agree. I mean, this is kind of like the warm up for Tuesday, and. You know, with the family, they're going to be there, and there are going to be a lot of them there. Like, you know, going through the list of people that are coming, it's an extended group of Gaudreaus. And look, they've kept a very low profile. Guy and Jane have, you know, they've been dealing with this horrifically painful struggle, largely behind closed doors. I think we've only seen them speak once in that video that we had on Sportsnet about a month ago. And then when I had that exchange with Jane, I was pleasantly surprised that we were able to hook up and talk a little bit about her feelings and, you know, her thoughts. And she's just very thankful. She admitted that this has been a very tough couple months for her and Guy, you know, with Thanksgiving coming around. And as I said off the top of the show, like it just means so much more down in the States here. It's such a family celebration, Thanksgiving. And that's part of why Johnny wanted to move closer to home, to be with his family or closer to his family on days like today. So I know she's been struggling with it, but good on them for coming. And I will say this, I do believe those lucky enough to have a ticket for Tuesday night, I do believe it will go down as one of the most powerful nights in the history of the Saddledome. And there have been some incredible moments in that building over the years, but I dare say that this will be unique, obviously, and it'll be very powerful for everybody involved. Bring your tissues and get ready to stand for extended periods of time, because this is Calgary's last chance. I shouldn't say last chance. This is a chance to wrap your arms, 18,000 people, to wrap your arms around this family and give them one big hug again and say, we're with you, we feel for you, and we love you, sort of thing. And I think it'll be a night that no one will ever forget.
That's coming up on Tuesday when the Blue Jackets are in town at the Scotiabank Saddledome. First is Friday afternoon's game in Columbus to take on the Blue Jackets there. And last thing to maybe hit on with this particular conversation, Francis, is I read about this going back to September, and I just thought, even at the time, and you reiterated in the column at sportsnet.ca today, and that is, you know, Dean Evason was very adamant right from the get-go, the head coach of the Blue Jackets, that, hey, we're not going to shy away from this. And the fact that they hang Johnny's jersey in his stall before every game, all that type of stuff. Like, I can't, on a day-to-day basis, I can't think of a better way or you take a look at what the Blue Jackets have done on a night-to-night basis. I can't think of a better way to honor a person's memory than Columbus has done with Johnny Gaudreau. And, you know, it hurts in Calgary, but, I mean, Johnny was in that locker room, and he was part of the fabric of that organization when this all happened. And I just – they've done such an incredible and heartwarming job of remembering him, even if they're not doing pregame tributes each and every night. Like, it's very clear that he is with them each and every game, hey?
Absolutely. And, you know, I bet you that if you ask the average Calgarian, they'd kind of think, well, yeah, Columbus, you know, you're in mourning, but we knew him so much better because he was in Calgary for 9 years, plus the years that he was, you know, we had him for, you know, a long time, and he really had a connection with the city and the people. But he, of course, had that too in Columbus. I mean, he was in their lineup. He's their most important player. So you can't diminish what Columbus has gone through as an organization or as a city of fans in terms of, oh, well, their connection's not as long as Calgary's. I mean, this was a massive blow in so many different ways. So the people here have felt it. They've reacted just as well as Calgary in terms of their tributes and the flowers and the memorials. And I thought the organization did a great job in, you know, putting the banner up. They haven't really said if it's a number retirement or if it's just a tribute or whatever it is. It doesn't need an explanation. It's there, and it serves as a memory. And I'd be just as fine with that in Calgary. I'm assuming something's going up into the rafters, and I don't think we need to get hung up on whether or not it's a number retirement, a jersey yeah. retirement, or it's just honoring the memory of him and or his brother or with his brother. However they do it, listen, the Flames organization has a long track record of absolutely nailing these tributes for past greats. And I have no doubt that whatever they have planned, it's been well thought out. It'll be brilliantly executed, and it'll have a ton of us in tears for a long, long time before that game on Tuesday night. And I'm really looking forward to that. I really think, I don't know if it brings closure, but I feel for some people it'll feel that way because they get to give the family one big hug.
Yeah. That's coming up on Tuesday. That is the second game this season between the Flames and the Columbus Blue Jackets. Of course, the first goes on Friday. That chat with Sean Monahan that Eric Francis had, that article is available at sportsnet.ca right now. It is right there on the homepage as the Flames continue a four-game road trip on Friday afternoon against Columbus, and then it wraps up Saturday against Pittsburgh. The following game to kick off a stretch at home is Tuesday, and again against the Blue Jackets. So it's going to be an emotional next few days for Flames fans. Going to be an emotional next few days for players in both the Columbus and Calgary locker rooms because they're going to be going through it even more acutely. And so that's going to be a really difficult stretch for a number of players inside both locker rooms as well. Hey, we are underway. It is a Thursday edition of the Eric Francis Hour, usually on Friday, but because we don't have regular Flames talk on Friday with an early game, we're doing it on Thursday. The Eric Francis Hour brought to you, as always, by our friends at Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18+, please. Play responsibly.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, it is a Thursday edition of the Eric Francis Hour. We are doing it one day early because, hey, we've got Black Friday action on Friday in the U.S. as the Flames will play the Columbus Blue Jackets at 1 o'clock. Obviously, we spent the good chunk of the first part of this hour with Eric Francis going over what Friday afternoon is going to feel like and the emotion that'll go into it, so on and so forth. We're chatting with Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. The Eric Francis Hour continues for Horse Racing Alberta. My name is Pat Steinberg. It's Flames Talk on a Thursday, and the Flames will play game three of this four-game road trip, Eric, in Columbus on Friday afternoon. Then they'll finish it off Saturday night in Pittsburgh. And all of a sudden, the scoring woes that we've been talking about for quite some time now make it 20 straight games where the Flames have not scored three or more goals. All of a sudden, those scoring woes may be rearing their head a little bit more on this road trip, hey?
Yeah, I mean, They didn't create much last night at all. And I know the shots at the end, I think, were 27-25 or something like that. But, like, after two periods, the Flames had 12 shots on net. I mean, that's borderline embarrassing. I mean, and there weren't many quality scoring chances. I know Kadri rang one off the crossbar, but other than that, I didn't see a whole lot of threatening Cam Talbot last night. So, yeah, the scoring woes are a mounting problem for this team. They've been successful this year despite their lack of offense. But I think, eventually that's going to catch up on them when the goaltending, to me, inevitably will you know, I don't want to say falter, but it won't be as good as it is now. I mean, I'm not sure how you could be at a higher level than these two goalies have played so far this year. Like, I can't think of a bad goal either one of them has let in where you got the real groaner going. But I that's an ongoing problem. They've tampered with the lines about as much as you can over the last little while. And, I think outside of Connor Zary, there wasn't anybody offensively yesterday who looked impressive to me in any way. As a matter of fact, the forwards, the indictment on them was not only are you not producing, not only are you not scoring, not only are you not threatening, you're now taking a lot of bad penalties,
right,
and putting your team behind the eight ball. Like the two penalties by Huberdeau and the one by Coronado, these are not good penalties. And I think the Coronado one, I think he was as stunned as anybody in the building. Like, really? You're going to call that? But I think Millsy said it best on our broadcast. Like, the onus is on you to not put yourself in that position where they can call that on you. So, by count, that was 12 power plays they gave up in a four-period span.
Yes.
You're not winning many hockey games when you do that. And that's not like this team, right, Pat? Like, we haven't had that conversation all year about them being lacking discipline, right? I mean, this is a relatively new thing for them.
It is, and to see them take 9 in that game against Ottawa, and then, yeah, 3 more in the first period against Detroit, you're like, where is this coming from? And then, funny enough, they don't take another one the rest of the night until overtime and the too many men on the ice penalty, which led to the Lucas Raymond game winner in overtime after a power play goal of their own had tied it up late in the game. And that's the one that people were talking about most. It's funny, I saw it a ton on Twitter, a little bit on our text line, and not even once on the phone lines, but there was a contingent of Flames fans who were really upset about that too many men on the ice call, and I've seen it multiple times now. I'm not exactly quite sure why there is the outcry about it. Like, based on everything I know about the rule, that was too many men on the ice, and clearly too many men on the ice. And especially, here's the thing that's most important, is that had they not called it, it would have given the Flames a defensive advantage, and it negated an odd man rush up the ice for Detroit in overtime. Like, the officials didn't have a choice in my eyes to call that one, now that I've seen it as much as I have. I know it got whistled down late, but it got whistled. A lot of times, you'll see officials not make that call if it doesn't give an advantage, but because it gave the Flames an advantage, the officials in a lot of ways didn't really have a choice to make that call. It was a really bad line change.
Yeah, I would agree. And I have a theory on why some people were really up in arms, and it stems from the fact that watching on the broadcast last night, the first thing they show is Connor Zary, the typically mild-mannered Connor Zary, with his arms outstretched, like incredulous, can't believe what's happening, the injustice of it all. I mean, he was one of the culprits who kind of got caught on the bad line change. And then they showed Ryan Huska kind of arguing vociferously with the officials too. And I think, people take their cues from that and think, well, if those guys are all up in arms, then we should be too.
Right.
And I asked Huska after the scrum yesterday, I kind of pulled him aside. I said, like, what did you see on that play, or what did you take umbrage with? And he said, I had a real problem with the fact that it looked like they weren't going to make the call. The play was continuing on, and it was only because, in his mind, the other team was screaming so loud on the bench that they decided to make the call. He said, like, that's why you made the call, because they're screaming so much. That was kind of the tone of why he was a little bit miffed about it. But I think that in his heart of hearts, he kind of said, it was a bad change. And like, I think he knows that it was a penalty. He just didn't like the way it went. It, you know, it kind of got whistled down at that point in time. And I think it was the linesman who actually made the call, which often is not a popular thing either. So that's my theory on why some people, you know, outside of the fact that, you know, nobody likes to lose a game based on a too many men call. Like, I mean, it's, you know, going way back to the years of Don Cherry, that's like one of the most haunting ways you could ever lose a hockey game. And so that doesn't sit well either, especially after they battled back and Cherry was a bit of a hero there. To have that all kind of dash because of just a real bad mental lapse, that's unfortunate for the Flames.
You asked Michael Backlund, you asked Ryan Huska about these things post game on Wednesday night about Connor Zeri. Let's talk a little bit more about him because there's another big moment, and you know we're used to Nazem Kadri, who has got a ton of third period game tying goals this year, and Nazem Kadri's made a history in his career of scoring big goals, and you know there are different guys on this team and different guys in the past on this Flames team that you could kind of count on in big clutch moments to come up with the big play. Well, you know, you wrote about this following the game in Detroit. Is that starting to become Connor Zeri? Is Zeri the guy who is maybe starting to emerge as, hey, you need a big play. You need something to happen in a big moment or a big stretch in a game. Is Zeri emerging as maybe that guy who could be the one to deliver?
I think so. And, you know, as Huska said, he says, like, that's what you hope for all your young prospects. And he hasn't been necessarily rewarded. I mean, that was only his fifth goal. And, you know, some of just how snake bit he was has kind of been well documented up until, you know, the last four games. He's got a four-game point streak going on, a couple goals in there, I think 5 points. But I think that this organization realizes that when you look at your roster, you look at the composition of your team, like, that's your guy for the next handful of years. If not longer, I think you'll be turning to as much as anybody in the organization for that big goal or that big shift that can help turn some momentum with offensive, you know, threats and such. So I really think that he's assimilated so well at that center ice position. We haven't really talked about it for the last handful of games because they were winning a whole bunch of games and it kind of got lost in the shuffle, but you know, this organization really, really needs to find that center. You know, they tried Pospisil, they tried Sharangovich, they're trying Zeri. I think we all think that he's probably the guy who it's going to be. And some early indications are that it could be a real nice fit for him moving forward. So I think he was the best forward in the game last night. I think he's been their best forward over the last four or five. And, you know, if you have someone else that you'd nominate and say was any, you know, even close, to how good Zeri's been of late and noticeable. You know, he's a very noticeable player because he hangs onto the puck probably longer than anybody else on the roster. I just think that he's really emerging as that guy who they're going to be looking to for a long, long time to be that difference maker.
And who would have seen that coming when we were even going into last season and he had a really good camp This was a guy that I don't think anybody saw quite this type of impact being made as an NHLer so early, and yet here he is. There's no question about it, Francis. He, you know, and Kuzmenko, if you want to touch on that quickly, we can. But right now, and maybe it should be Kuzmenko, but at this stage, it's not. There's no doubt who the most dynamic offensive guy on this team is right now. There's no doubt that if you're looking for somebody to make something happen out of nothing, there's one guy that you look to, and that's number 47. And I look, Nazem Kadri scores big goals, but he doesn't maybe have that same dynamic side of his game. He's a very skilled guy, but maybe not quite as slick the way that Zeri is. You know, we're all still wondering what's going to happen with Huberdeau, and Backlund and Coleman can score big goals, but you're looking for that, you know, big moment. I look to Zeri right now as the guy who's going to deliver it, and I look to Zeri right now as the guy that if you're lacking a little bit offensively, if you need a spark, even if it's just a nice rush or something to get a little bit of momentum, I look to Zeri as the guy to provide it.
Yeah, and I, you know, to your point, he didn't start the season last year, and never mind the fact that he wasn't on an NHL roster to start the season last year. I know he was the last cut, but I'm not sure he was on many people's radar outside of inside the organization. And to come this far, this fast, and to have the poise that he has, like, he tries to make moves in the offensive zone that none of the other players on that team kind of have the guts to make. And it's almost like he's too young to know that he shouldn't be trying to dangle guys at the NHL level. But he tries it, and hey, it doesn't always work, but good things, you know, can lead from it. You know, whereas opposed to a guy like Kuzmenko, who, you know, is his own worst enemy because he outthinks himself a lot of ways with his desire to never shoot the puck. You know, he could be a very dynamic forward, and he is when he's playing well, but he's just not been doing it. Jerry has replaced him for sure, in my mind, like you said, as the most dynamic forward out there right now. And again, who would have thunk it? But hey, this whole season, you know, they've had this great start and people are starting to talk about the playoffs now and such and all that, wherever that goes. But this whole season was supposed to be about how are the youngsters going to continue to grow? Like, this season was supposed to be marked by not how many points they get as a team, but how much growth inside the organization we see from guys like Zeri, guys like Pospisil, guys like Wolf, to a lesser degree of Vladar, and then whoever else might be next, like Sam Honzek or whoever's going to surprise us next. And that's the biggest growth I think we've seen so far this year in terms of youngsters. Wolf is obviously leading that pack.
Yeah.
But in terms of skaters, Zeri is way ahead of everybody else, I think.
Wes and I had a really good chat about Kuzmenko on Tuesday's program, and again, doesn't do much of anything. He at the very least attempted to shoot the puck a little bit more against Detroit on Wednesday, but he still is at, we're 22, 23 games into the season, Francis, one goal from Kuzmenko. Like, what do you do there? Maybe our last stop before we say goodbye on this Thursday, but how close to healthy scratch territory should the Flames be with a guy like Kuzmenko?
Yeah, I mean, the mantra, you know, what you've heard of the coach say 100 times, we just need him to shoot more. Like, he doesn't understand how good his shot is, but also how many good things can happen when you put the puck on the net. He really does overthink it and tries to make the perfect play. That's the way the coach keeps saying it. And that doesn't happen very often in the NHL. When it does, it's a highlight reel goal. And he's got many of those setups and goals in his career, but he's got to shoot the damn biscuit. And it's driving the fan base crazy. It's driving the coaches crazy. And to me, that's when you bench him. If he just passes up too many more shots, then that's when the impetus is to bench him. I do think he's working hard. One of the comments that the coach used to say early on was he's just not moving his feet. I do think he's doing that now, but it's all wasted energy because the plays go to die on his stick with a terrible, ill-conceived back pass or lateral pass that nobody else saw coming and nobody's going to get to it. So if he doesn't shoot the puck more, then I could see them finally saying, look, we have no other choice but to put you in the press box. And I know that there are a lot of people clamoring to have Klapka in and Kuzmenko out at this point in time. And maybe that's what it takes for him to finally snap too. But yeah. I think whether he snaps too or not, it's pretty hard to envision that this organization is going to be able to get like basically anything for him at the trade deadline at this point in time, right? He's going to have an incredible turnaround, you know, like the one we saw in the final month of the season. For anybody to even consider like giving anything more than a third or fourth round pick for this guy.
We know it exists. We know it's there because you're right. We saw it in the final 20 games or so last year, but we have seldom seen it so far this year. I'm curious how close a guy like Kuzmenko is to maybe being sat down for a game or two. All right, yep. Francis, get out of here, man. We will see you back in Calgary next week. And thanks for everything. And I encourage people one more time to go check out sportsnet.ca and that piece in the conversation with Sean Monahan. Be well. Get home safe, eh?
Thanks, my man. Happy U.S. Thanksgiving, everybody.
There he is. That's Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. One day earlier than normal. Usually we do the Eric Francis Hour on Friday, but with the early Flames game, a Thursday edition of the Eric Francis Hour wrapping up, brought to you, as always, by our friends at Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry has a $312 million positive economic impact in Alberta annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly.